Struggling with sporadic releases and producer stagnation? Meet the Producer Growth Scorecard, a free tool I created to transform your music production game. Unleash efficiency and triple your output. It worked for me. Ready to elevate your music? Grab your free scorecard at synthmusicmastering.com/free.
Hello, Inside the Mix podcast fans. This is Brian Hazard of Color Theory. I'm a synthpop / synthwave producer from LA. If you'd like to get to know me a little better, subscribe to email updates at colortheory.com and I'll send you 5 of my best songs. And with that, you're listening to the Inside the Mix podcast, and here's your host, Mark Matthews.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast. I'm Mark Matthews, your host, musician, producer, and mix and mastering engineer. You've come to the right place if you want to know more about your favorite synth music artists, music engineering and production, songwriting, and the music industry. I've been writing, producing, mixing, and mastering music for over 15 years, and I want to share what I've learned with you. Hey, folks, and welcome back to the Inside the Mix podcast. Now, this is the Synth Pals Pub. If you are new Inside the Mix podcast listener, welcome, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. In this Synth Pals Pub episode, I am very excited. I say this every time, and I do mean it. I'm excited to be joined by my guests today. We've got Legacy FM, we've got Isle 9, and we've got Subneon, and we've got Aerowolf. If you want to join me at the Synth Pals Virtual Pub and feature on the podcast, just go to insidethemixpodcast.podio.com, as it's a great opportunity to expand your network and learn from your peers. This is what we're going to do today. And as you can see, if you are watching this or listening, bonus, every session gets aired as an episode of the Inside the Mix podcast, so you get more exposure for your music. So today we're going to discuss the one thing about music production you know now that you wish you'd know when you started out. Collaboration. And we're also going to look at how to grow your audience. Okay. And then we're going to play 3 songs from 3 of the artists who've joined me today. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. And how are you all?
Yeah, I'm good. Good.
Very well, thank you.
Hopefully
fantastic,
not too loud.
Stuff. Oh, well, also,
I keep my meters.
No, you're okay, Tim. I was just going to say, this is actually going live in the Facebook community group. So I'm just seeing if that's happened. And it doesn't look... No, I think it has. I think it has.
What, you mean Facebook's actually working? Wow.
Well, it's certainly working on YouTube. But whether it's working in the Facebook community group is a different thing. It's sorry, folks. I'm just going to see this. This is why you should plan these things properly. It's a start test. My video is starting. Let's see if that works. I'm not going to spend too much time on that. So, questions. The first question for today's episode is this, and this comes from community group member Nick Plain, aka Blockhouse, and he asks, "What is the one thing about music production you know now that you wish you'd known when you started out?" So I'm going to repeat the question just to give you a bit of time to think again. What is the one thing about music production you know now that you'd wish you'd known when you started out? Let's go. Tim, do you want to take this one first?
I can try, yeah. God, this is a bit legacy, really, because, like, I'm going back to when I first started doing music production. The one thing I wish I'd known was that ADATs were absolutely shit and that no one should ever buy them, and that computers were going to become as amazing as they are at doing audio, because I'd bought tons of, like, ADAT machines. If you know what an ADAT machine is, sort of 8 tracks of digital audio in a sort of, you know, you can just pile them up so you could get 24-track, 32-track, like, you know, digital audio. And I was running a studio at the time and I spent tons of money on ADAT machines because I was convinced that computers were still too dicey to do the job. And within about 6 months, half the ADAT machines had gone wrong and were costing me a fortune. And then I'd had to go and buy new, like, computer and all the rest of it. And, you know, gradually I got rid of all the ADAT machines and they just cost me an absolute fortune. So I think it's sort of might seem not very up to date, but I think it's that thing of sort of like, sometimes being like sort of, you don't want to necessarily go with the trends always. It's like, you know, I've got a microphone in front of me that was a Neumann TLM, which I've been using for the last 20 years, 30 years or whatever, and it's a great mic and it's going to continue to be a great mic. But, like, it's that sort of thing of you never quite know when you're about to go and waste your money on something completely useless. Like, I bought a Novation sort of, like, Supernova at one point in my life, and now I've probably got plugins that do the job just as well and probably better. And it's that sort of thing. You can't really... I don't think you can kind of know it. It's in retrospect that you kind of see it. But, like, you know, to go like, no, that's not a good road to go down. That's going to cost me a fortune. And really, actually, I need to just... use the tools that I've got and learn how to use the tools that I've got really, really well. So I think that's really the point I'm making. But like that was an example of it. But you know, you're bound to make mistakes as well. But like I think that you have to kind of maybe that's part of it is accepting that you do make mistakes and that's fine and you move on. You spend thousands of pounds on something utterly useless that becomes a sort of, you know, stops the fridge door opening. But you know, it's one of those sort of things, like you can't always get it right in music, but like, yeah, I think sort of learning to use the tools that I've got in front of me really well is the thing I wish I'd kind of cottoned on to maybe at some points when I was still gear hunting and thinking, if I have this preamp, if I have that, if I have this, and I think that was never the answer. So there we go.
Yeah, nice. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, it kind of explains, or it's that idea of like if trying to accumulate gear to make something better when you haven't really mastered what you have in front of you, you know, and thinking, oh, I can't get this right, I'm going to go and buy something else, and I'm going to buy something else, you know, until you can get it right. Which doesn't really work. ADAT, is that a light pipe, if I remember rightly? Is that the small...
Yeah, you now have...
it's quite very thin.
Yeah, that's right. ADAT optical comes off in light pipe. And that's still used now a lot for sort of... Well, it has been used, but, like, you know, just transferring sort of digital audio. Yeah. But, like, you know, ADAT machines were actually VHS-style... in fact, you could actually use a VHS, but, like... and put the tape in, and it was like a sort of 8-track DAT machine. It recorded 8 tracks of audio on a tape, on a VHS-style tape. But you could hook lots of machines together, so you could have, like, they were modular, so they'd all sync with each other. But they had, like, complicated transports and things, and they would just go wrong, like, really easily. And they didn't sound that great either. So, you know, and you didn't have all the joys of, like, hard disk where you can just hop all over the place, you know. You were still on a rewind, fast-forward, put a locator in, play. But so it was a long-winded job. But I was just at that cusp when analog was dying and digital was coming in. So it was that kind of thing where I think people, computers weren't quite up to it. That sat in the middle, but, you know... but now, thank God, we don't have to worry about that. We can do it all on an Apple M1 or something. Yeah. Well, you can. You have one. Yeah. A nice shiny one.
I do. Mm. I do. It's bigger than you think as well. I thought it was going to be quite small. It doesn't fit.
Are we still talking about
the
computer here?
Which, I was going to say that could sound quite weird if you took that out of context.
So I have a follow-up question to that, though. Would you, Opus, would you say that it's a lot easier now for just anybody to pick up and start making music and producing and mixing and all that compared to, you know, prior to the digital transition?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think other things are complicated now. Like, you know, I mean, there is a, like, you know, the level to which you're expected to be able to grasp software and grasp all these different things, and they keep changing, and you've got a new... It's quite a speed, isn't it? And, like, new things to be able to upload to this, and all the kind of social media and all the kind of things that you're expected to be able to do has mushroomed. You know, all you had to do was get something down on a tape and go, there we go, you know, sort of thing. It was sort of simpler at one point in one way, but I do think the route in is easier. Yeah, yeah, a lot easier. You know, you can have a laptop, interface, headphones, bit of software, and be making music. Yeah, so I guess it is easier. Yeah. Making good music's never easy, though, is it really?
Now, that's a great question. Question, Mark. So it's one I always ask when I talk to engineers on the podcast who've been in the game for quite a while. For example, today I was talking to Mike Exeter, Black Sabbath and Judas Priest. So he's been around in the industry for a long, long time. And I asked him the same question about how he got into the music industry and how he found his feet and cut his teeth and how different it is today to do that. And it is so different. Mm. I mean, I don't have the experience of entering the music industry back in the 90s, but it's so accessible now. But like Tim said there, it's very accessible. But actually creating something decent, and that's the key. You can have all the technology in front of you.
You've got to break through.
Yeah, go on, Tim.
I guess a lot of other people making music, you know, you've got to be at a level or doing something better than that. And the level's quite high, isn't it? People expect quite a lot, I suppose, you know. So that's hard as well, you know. But
friends in high places goes a long way.
Yeah, that's always helped, yeah.
There's a lot of pretty average music out there that gets pretty popular. I'm like, okay. Not to throw shade on anybody else, but
no, that's always true, isn't it? That there's always people that sort of seem to do very well, and you go like, really, is it because your music's that great, or is just you knew the right people and had the right connections in the first place? So yeah, it does vary,
and a fair bit of financial backing
doesn't go amiss.
I bet you if we all had unlimited resources, we'd all have multiple albums out there.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Although you could say in argument, devil's advocate to that, if you had all that money, you go back to what you said earlier, Tim, in that you'd have all that cash and you just end up spending it on shit you don't need, and you just end up with a load of stuff. Stu's back. I think Stu's having a bit of connection.
I'll just buy a yacht.
So hopefully you can make it back.
I don't even like going up.
Turn it into a studio.
Yeah. I think someone's done that before.
A yacht studio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have they?
Yeah. Well,
there's a boat in Bristol that's been turned into a venue, which is the Thekla. Mm. I don't know if any of the UK contingent here have ever been to have you been to Bristol? Look at the Thekla. I've been there for a couple gigs. Mm. It's when you've had a few beers, it's quite disorientating because it's not quite even. And but good fun nonetheless.
Of course,
great stuff. Thank you, Tim. Go on, Tim.
No, I was just going to say, Floyd, of course, had a barge, didn't they? So Dave Gilmour's studio on the Thames. Yeah, so yeah, boats can be a thing.
Does that still exist?
I don't know. That honest answer, I don't know if he still does records there or not. Yeah.
I thought about a canal boat, but then again, too narrow. I think you'd end up with a lot of standing waves and stuff, I think, in a canal boat.
Yeah, it couldn't even put you, not wide think enough for your speakers, really. Narrow stereo image.
No. I did toy with the idea. This is when I was when I was at university, and I was thinking, right, let's think of inventive ways that I could get into the industry because you want to do something different. I toured with a caravan for a while, and I thought about having a caravan studio and just like going around as a mobile service. And I was just like, all that, like the gear I've got in a caravan, I don't know how safe it would be. I mean, you could punch a hole through a caravan wall. So not that I've done that, but I'm sure you can.
Yes, I'm sure you can.
There you go, audience. Just wanted to test that. Actually, no, don't do that. Then that'll come back on me if you did. That I coerced you to punch a hole for a caravan.
Musicians running around, punching holes through caravans. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Is that fact of the day?
Yeah.
Fact of the day. You can punch a hole for a caravan. Go back to the question, because I realised we're already quarter of an hour in. This is what I was saying off air, is the fact we probably have one question.
Yeah, don't ask me anything, it just takes too long.
So going back to, just to readdress what it was, what is the one thing about music production you know now that you'd wish you'd known when you started? And I don't think it really matters how long you've been producing, because we're always learning. So let's go. What about yourself, Sub Neon? One thing about music production you know now that you'd wish you'd known right at the beginning.
We'll be right back.
Hey, how's it going? Just a friendly reminder, make sure you don't miss out on the Producer Growth Scorecard. It's an amazing tool that can seriously level up your music production game and speed up your music releases. The best part, it will not cost you a single penny. Yep, it is totally free. Don't let this opportunity slip away, folks. Take a moment to grab your own Producer Growth Scorecard at synthmusicmastering.com/free.
Well, right at the beginning, it isn't too far ago in terms of electronic music. I started in August of last year. I was in bands prior to that, and I guess one of the things that I was having to teach myself is patience, really. You know, when you're singing in a live band, it's all really instant. You know, you set up and you play, you break it all down, and you go on to the next gig and everything. Now, you know, I put a lot of pressure on myself when I'm producing. And the first couple of mixes that I ever produced were dreadful. You know, I mean, this is before I started using Ableton. I started using a platform called Acid Pro, which is just loops. And I hadn't heard of an EQ, didn't use an EQ, and it was all just wall-to-wall mud, you know. So, and I'd get really frustrated about it. But actually, through the community that I've which is one of the best things about producing music in this time, is that, you know, you can build friendships and critical friends more than anything else, I think, that will give you the advice that you need. But I'd give myself a real kicking. You know, this is rubbish, and I want it to sound. You know, I know what I want it to sound like, but it's just not getting there. You know, so over time and over many banging my head on the keyboard, thinking how can I get that bass to work with this other sort of effect, I've just started to give myself a little bit more breathing space. You know, if it's not working now, leave it for a bit, come back to it, and you know, you've got a good chance of it with a fresh pair of eyes or a fresh pair of ears, more importantly, to make it glue together. You know, so that would be my lesson to myself. Just chill out a bit and have a bit of patience. You'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wise words.
I think that's exactly that, and I think it's something that, yeah, exactly. It's something that we've mentioned many times on the podcast in about, like, having taken time and stepping away from a production if you're struggling with it, and also just not being too hard on yourself and thinking you've got to have the final product there and then. You know, it's and as you mentioned there, it's great that there is such a wealth of support and information. So the sort of a follow-up question to what you've mentioned there is, what, so you started producing sort of last year, you were in a band before, is there a single sort of resource or something that has really helped spearhead your production process
in terms of quality output, you mean? Yeah, I mean, it's really bouncing snippets of tracks to people that I've made a friendship with, you know. Yeah. and they, you know, you listen to their stuff, you know, I'm talking about Helsinki Project, Clinton, Russell Nash, you know, all these guys that they're not only are producing first rate music, but it's also you know, they're more than willing to pay it forward, you know, and take you through some ideas as to what you could do to make that sound pop a little bit more. Russell Nash has spent hours with me bouncing messages to and fro, saying reduce that sound down by 2 dB and see what that does. You know, have you thought about doing some mid-side EQ in there? At that point, I was like, what's mid-side EQing? You know, so all the way through the process, I've been just picking up little bits and pieces.
Wonder where Russell got that from, Mark.
I do wonder where he got that. Yes. it's brilliant that you mentioned that, Sevneon, because it's great to hear you mention those names. Like, you got Russell Nash, you got Clintone, Helsinki Project. I've been trying to get Clintone on this show and Helsinki Project for a while. I love Clintone stuff and Helsinki Project and Russell's as well. Russell, for the audience listening, has been on the podcast. Couldn't tell you what number, but he's been on it. If you want to have a listen to that episode, I'm going to say he's in the 20s. But yeah, it's cool to hear that Russell's giving yourself advice, because I think you can attest to this, Tim. I remember when Russell started producing, and I remember bouncing back and forth with Russell and listening to mixes and offering feedback and stuff. So it's really cool that he's got on. I mean, he releases a lot of music, and he's done a lot. So it's really cool to hear that. Don't know what you think.
Yeah, Tim. No, I agree. Yeah, because Russell was. Well, Russell and I still talk quite a lot, but like, you know, he'll sort of, when he was beginning to sort of similar time to me, I guess, but like in terms of releasing, but obviously I've been doing music production since the 90s, so quite a long time, but like, Russell was just spinning things back and forth with me all the time, and like, you know, and it's great. I love that in the community, full stop. I spin things back. I'm regularly sending you stuff, Mark, and talking, and you know, like other producers, and I mean, yeah, it's a really great side of it, isn't it? And being able to do that, because we're in the kind of point in time where we've all interconnected all across the world, is crazy, you know. I sat on that other thing that I continually forget about, that everyone's on,
Discord.
Yes, that's the one. I was on Discord, with Faurex in an actual, like, sort of room where he was busy, sort of, as it were, mixing his stuff and creating something. And we were just, like, chatting through it and making suggestions, and he was changing the arrangement as we went. And I was like, this is crazy. This could have never happened. But, like, now we can just, like, have this rapport, you know. It's great. So, fantastic thing.
It's like being in the studio, being able to look over somebody's shoulder and be like, oh, that's how you do that, or that's how you use that. Yeah, it's a wonderful tool.
It is wonderful, isn't it?
I didn't know you could do that in Discord. I'm going to have to look into that. I didn't realize that was a thing.
That's basically how Legacy FM works. It's one other person. And, we're cutting a lot of our stuff in Discord. Then we send the files back and forth to each other. One of us ends up with all the stems and does the mixing and stuff, but almost exclusively done in Discord.
Right,
fantastic. Yeah. Just for the audience listening, Faurex will be on the next Synth Pals Pub in February. A slight plug there.
Awesome.
As will Neon Highway, who's going to be making his way back.
Yeah,
Carl. Yes,
he's been doing his world tour.
He's off on his jollies. Yes, indeed. I can't wait to hear the story.
Not a musical tour, but it's he has been having an amazing journey.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. I think it's well overdue for him. Anywho, let's move on. So, yeah, just to readdress the question again, one thing about music production you know now that you wish you know when you started. What about yourself? We've got Aerowolf, Stu.
Yeah, I think, apologies for my technology. I had to do the quick switch on the laptop, so this one seems to be doing better. Yeah, I think similar to Sub Neon, I think with me, I think it's the mixing, which is something that I would have liked to have known when I first started, you know, music production back in 2020, probably, seriously. But it's like using compressors, EQs, the various different types of EQs. And also music theory. I think if I went back in time, I'd give myself a slap and just say, you know, brush up on your music theory, because I think that helps tremendously. You know, you're always referring to things when I'm producing, mixing stuff. So, I think those would be the two main things, Mark, to be honest with you.
Fantastic. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think what I find is, and I've had this conversation with a few audio engineers as well, and there's a lot of information out there with regards to mixing and mastering, and it's trying to find the ones or the what suits you, because there's a lot of different flavors with regards to it. And there's more and more, I find, I don't know about you guys, when you go on social media, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm guilty of doing it, I know, I put posts out there with various production bits and pieces, but it's kind of like there's a wealth of information out there, but I think you just at times you need to be a bit careful. I think, I don't, are any of you on TikTok by any chance? I know Tib is. We've got a few nodding heads.
Yeah,
Mark, I use your tips all the time.
Do you?
Yeah, and other producers. There's like London Noise or something. I don't know. For some reason, I'm in this UK group. I can't seem to find any American synthwave artists.
Wow. But, go where the quality is.
I do follow a lot of those tips, and that's kind of how I'm learning, just on the fly as I'm mixing. And it's been tremendous. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of, because I kind of flick between Instagram and TikTok. But what I'm noticing a lot on TikTok now is you could probably find it. There's a thing where there's like an incoming stitch, and it's just audio engineers calling each other out on everything. It's nuts. If you dig far enough, you'll see it. And they're stitching, because you can stitch other videos, and then they'll just call each other out and say, no, that's not right. And it's getting a bit Wild West out there. I'm waiting for someone to find one of my old ones and be like, no, that's not right. But I think that goes back to what I said earlier about like finding information with regards to mixing, production and stuff online.
I go out and seek information on specific topics, usually on YouTube or like a forum. But then I love the ones that just hit me in my feed on Instagram, where it's not something I'm looking for, but then I go try it and like, oh, wow. And then you just go down a rabbit hole, you're trying new things, and it kind of changes your game up. So sometimes it's the info you're not even looking for that stands out.
Do you have, I don't know about you, but I've got like a saved folder and it's just full of music production tech that I should really go through. And I will at some point, but like you, it'll just come up and I'll be like, oh, I like that. I like that. I like that. And then at some point I should really go through it. I'm probably not the only person who does that. It's got a whole saved folder of music production techniques.
I was thinking it's also sometimes it's the simple stuff like grouping tracks, you know, and things like that. That's, I mean, I think you had a guest on one of your podcasts, Mark, and he was suggesting really simple things like favouriting tracks and things like that.
Oh, yes,
and,
yeah, yeah.
It's some of that stuff that I think is useful to the budding music producer.
Yeah, most definitely. Just look, because it just makes your workflow a lot easier. I think going back to what Sub Neon said earlier about how your first few productions you can almost get deterred by the quality, but you've got to persevere beyond that. But if you've got things in place to make it easier for you, like favoriting your favorite, I use favorite a lot there, starring your favorite patches or creating those templates just to kickstart your songwriting, it removes those barriers that would otherwise potentially stop you from doing it and kill that motivation. Fantastic stuff. How are we now? Oh, 25 minutes. This is it. All on one question. Let's go with Legacy FM then. Final one. What is the one thing about music production you know now that you'd wish you'd known when you started? Legacy FM.
Don't pay for AI mastering.
I dare you mention the platform?
Oh, gosh. What was it called? I can't remember.
It just turned out like
crap. And I wasted like $80 and then I just did my own dirty master and put it out anyways.
£80 for an online master?
That's for like 3 or 4 tracks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because as I mentioned off air, I do block bookings and I was talking to a mastering engineer on the podcast earlier. That's going to come out in a few weeks. And he mentioned AI mastering off air. We didn't get around to mention it in the actual episode, but he said that. It's like one of his things he said was tips is stay away from AI mastering. I'm sure you can get some good results from it.
You can. That'd
be interesting. You have to have a good mix and good reference tracks and good. There's a way to do it, but I'm not trying to learn how to do the AI mastering.
I was going to play devil's advocate there and say, has anyone experienced a good experience?
Well, I use Cloudbounce.
Go on, Tim.
I've sort of got Ozone 10. I do all my own mastering a lot of the time. But say I just sort of wanted to sort of put something out quickly or whatever, like just, I've just finished a mix and I just want to kind of just like sort of send it over or something. I find Cloudbounce is quite useful. But I actually used it for Miami Nights, my debut track, because I was trying some different things. And I've got the kind of version on my desktop where I can use it as much as I want, so it doesn't cost me anything. I kind of got that on some plug-in boutique deal for some stupid amount of money for a lifetime membership for $60 or something. So it never cost me to use it at all. And so I can try as many things as I want and as many variants and changes. So in that sense, I can give it different references, all the rest of it. So I've got nothing to lose. If I put a track in there and I try these things out. If it comes out good, then it comes out good, because good is good as far as it doesn't matter whether it went through AI or it went to like a guy at like Abbey Road. If it sounds good, it sounds good. So, but like, you know, I mean, I've been loving Ozone 10 recently, which I've been using a lot. I used to do a lot of mastering, like a lot of mastering of albums and all kinds of things, using all of the individual stuff from my studio. But at the end of the day, sometimes I find that one of the things that's great with potentially using AI or Ozone or something like that, something almost like a in-the-box solution, sort of one kind of, you know, sort of plug-in solution or something like that, is that you do actually hear the results and then you go back and tweak the mix. And I think the mix is where it all really, really lies. As you said, Legacy, if you get a really good mix. But then if you put it through your mastering and it's not coming out right, you can go back to your mix, change your mix, adapt it. But if you were paying for that on every single one, that would start to notch up very quickly. And so I can see that's really where a mastering engineer is going to be a lot more useful in that scenario. I mean, but getting your mix right is definitely number one to getting a good result anyway. But, you know, I mean, we all know that, but it's hard, isn't it?
I have yet to figure out how to get the mix right, so I'm still working on that.
Well, you know.
It's fun,
yeah,
though.
Getting the mix right is key, as you mentioned there. And I think it's those platforms, I use them in a similar way to what Tim said there. Not the paid ones. Like if you've got an AI, Ozone had one for a while. It was like a beta program whereby you could upload and it would do a master for you. And I was using that just to put demos out or just to get an idea of what it might sound like when it's mastered or what I'm aiming for. Yeah, something like that, you know. And I would use it in that respect. My a question off the back of mastering, this is an interesting one. Do you all do separate sessions for your mastering, or do you do it on your master bus?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, that's an interesting...
master bus.
You've got master bus. So basically...
I use the master bus.
Master bus. So basically, it's rendering or bouncing a mix and then importing it into another DAW or the same one, but a separate session to master it rather than doing it in the same mix session.
I got a sort of in-between answer to that. Because I use a lot of, like, you know, stuff on my master bus anyway. I mean, I essentially could just lob it out and go, there, it's mastered. But I tend to have everything sort of on there. Then I'll actually get to the final stage and output a mix at -6 dB and take it in and master it. So I do have a separate mastering stage, but it's almost like I'm listening through, you know, an SSL bus compressor, which I know you use, Mark, and then I'll have an L3 on the end, and I'll have all of these things together. So I've got a pretty close to mastered kind of level that I'm listening to at the end of it all. But then I'll drop it down by 6 dB, output it, take off the limiter, drop it down to 6 dB, output it, and then master it. So yeah, I do a separate.
So you're mixing into your sort of mixing into the mastering chain.
Yeah,
then.
I am. Yeah,
sort of.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. But the limiter isn't really pushed. It's just like sort of catching anything at the top. You know.
Yeah.
But I am.
It's interesting that you mentioned waves there. I don't know if you're all waves user. I know you are, Tim, but I've upgraded and I have to. This is going off topic now, and this is a bugbear of mine. But now because I've upgraded, I've got to go to version 14 with my plugins, and I have to pay again to do it. And that is not right.
They're a horrible
and I'm not
company.
Taking out a waves update plan. This is my gripe. I'm going to do this on air now with waves. Right? That I've paid for these plugins. I've got to pay again. Whereas every other platform, I upgraded Pigments. No additional payment or anything along those lines with Arteria. Slate Digital, nothing with those. Plugin Alliance. But Waves, I've got to pay 70-odd quid to have my upgraded plugins just so I can use them again.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the SSL bus compressor is my go-to, so I'm going to have to do it.
The only thing I'll say in their
defense
is that the plugins are really, really good. A lot of them, not all of them, some of them I really don't like, but a lot of them are really good for the money in the first place. I think when you get them on their sales or whatever, which they've always got on, they're like one of these places that has always got a sale on, aren't they? But like, you know, but for $30 or 30 quid or whatever, I think that a lot of the gear they sell is very good. So if you did have to pay again, it's not too terrible. But whereas like UAD, for instance, who I use a lot, like, you know, just one of their plugins will cost you 200-300 quid for a compressor or something. And you'd be like, is that really justifiable? You know, I mean, it's a little bit of code, you know, but that's what they charge. So, you know, what can you say? If you get sucked into it, you get sucked into it.
They are great plugins.
Yeah. But
did anyone pick up the freebie before Christmas? I think it's called Little Tube saturation plugin. That's pretty good. I don't think it's free anymore. Well, there you go. It's very good. I recently got the Renaissance compressor, which is very,
very good. Yeah.
I used that on the track recently. It's a very good compressor, the Renaissance compressor. I got it, once again, it was just a shade under 30 quid, whatever. I'm not sure that is in dollars. But that's very good. I used that on bass and vocals, if I remember rightly. I think there's an actual specific one for vocals. I'm not trying to sell waves.
Here's a little-known plugin that nobody seems to really like to choose, DBX compressor. If you ever seen a bass players used to love playing through DBX 160 compressors, and you see them in studios, DBX 160s. And they just became this sort of thing that just disappeared as all software turns up, and nobody, you wouldn't see a DBX. And then, like, Waves made a version of it, and UAD have made an even better version. But I don't think they're very popular. I don't think everyone goes, like, I must have a DBX. Try it on bass. Just absolutely magic. It does magic things on bass. And, like, you know, if you're compressing your bass line, try a DBX 160. And there's a Waves version, which is why I say it. Like, there's only a few people that make them. But just one of those compressors nobody thinks of using. But I don't know why, but they do something really lovely on a bass. So there we go. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very good compressors. I had a brief time in a studio called Modern World in Tetbury, just outside of Bristol. And it's for sale if anyone's got 500 grand. Well, it was for sale. And they had DBX compressors, they had distressors, they had the lot, man. It was very nice. At the time, I didn't really know what I was doing, so I kind of didn't really use them to my advantage, but there you go.
Really?
Gone around. So,
no,
go on,
it's a really quick one, this. But,
that's
but
right, mate, go ahead.
You mentioning that, it's like, I was like literally online the other day, and I was recounting the fact that at one point I did a session at Genesis's studio for a whole weekend. I was producing this guy, and I got use of Genesis's studio, the farm, which was amazing. So ridiculous scenario. I was stuck in front of this enormous SSL mixing desk. We are talking like, I think, 72 input or something. It's absolutely crazy. And halfway through the sort of morning, the head engineer who'd been sort of there for me suddenly went like, oh, you're all right, aren't you? You know what you're doing. And just fucked off and left me with this sort of enormous sort of thing. And I was like, what the hell am I doing? But I had to continue this session as if I knew. And it was quite crazy. But anyway, that was a weekend spent there. But I was trying to explain to someone what this desk looked like and what the place looked like. And so I just looked it up online. And it turned up on eBay because they're literally selling the desk. And like you were saying, like with Bristol and the selling.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was just like, it was just like some crazy amount of money, like, you know, I don't know, 150, 200,000, you know, whatever it was for the desk. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to buy that just for the kicks and giggles, just because I remember it. But, like, you know, it would have been great. I don't know. I don't think it would have fitted in our garage somehow. But, you know, yeah. So there we go. It was on eBay. Still is, I think. Hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of that's a lot of money to spend.
Yeah,
on eBay,
that's what I was thinking. Who just goes on and go buy it now? 100 grand.
yeah. I might place a bid, which will be a lot lower than 250 grand.
Let's see if you get it for $20. Yeah.
So what I'm going to do? So with regards to that question, what is the one thing about music production? So mine, I thought I'd leave mine till last. Is you know now that you wish you know when you started, and that is balance. I was toying with balance and gain staging, and I went with balance. So when I first started out mixing producing and then mixing, I would mix as I went along, which is fine, and I probably do that still to some extent. But what I do now and what I adopted is balance, is getting the mix balanced and then going in and doing my EQ compression, whatever it is I may be doing after that, is getting balance first in the mix. Because I remember when I first started mixing and producing and whatnot, and I'd be forever, and I'd look at toying with the faders, and I'd look at the faders, and they'd be all over the shop, and then it would just get to the point where it just became unmanageable, unwieldy, and then I get into binge editing and binge mixing. So for me, the one thing I'd wish I'd know more of, and I wish somebody had said to me at the beginning, was get a balance first, get a balanced mix, and then work off the back of that. So that would be mine, would be getting balance. And that includes panning as well. Panning is, and another one, mixing in mono. Now, I do a lot of my mixing in mono. Here we go, Tim. What are your thoughts on mixing in mono?
A lot of people swear by it,
Yeah.
I've not really done it, got into it myself, but a lot of people do swear by it.
I do listen to the track in mono, but just before I start mastering it, so I listen to it on the side and also in mono, just to listen to the frequencies. But yeah, I've not tried it in the mix yet, but it's a good idea.
Yeah, the reason I do it in the mix is, for me, it's the easiest way that I can figure out when frequencies are clashing and instruments are clashing. Because if it's in mono, I mean, you could do it in stereo as well, but I just find for my workflow, it's so much easier. I probably should have said this as my answer, to be honest. When it's in mono, I can hear those conflicting frequencies and I can get a better balance. And also another one as well, which I'd known, and right at the beginning, I'm going to do three now, was not to mix at lower volumes.
Because
everything sounds better when it's loud. Mix at lower volumes.
I did spend the first 20 years of my life completely disregarding that in every way, shape or form. That's why I'm partly deaf, I think. I just like absolutely blew the speakers through the roof. It was great having a studio where you could just turn it up until 4 in the morning. Nobody gave a fuck. I loved it. Yeah.
It's easily done.
Yeah, it doesn't produce good...
That dog just slowly creep up.
It does not produce good mixes. It doesn't, no. I think it's good for tracking, though.
Yeah.
I will say that. I will say a bit of volume can be really good for tracking.
Yeah, I think it helps with the vibe. Yeah. I think if you've got musicians in the room and it's a quiet track, you're quietly tracking. Yeah. From my experience, when I've been recording, I've been the artist being recorded. If it's quiet,
you want to get enough to get a vibe, don't you?
Going back exactly. And going back to doing it at a lower level as well. If you are mixing it at a lower level, I think it translates. Obviously, you're gonna pump it at some point to see what it sounds like loud. But I think it translates better, on streaming platforms if you've done it at a lower level. Yeah. Because inherently, streaming platforms will do that to it if it's mastered at too high a level anyway. And then if they've done that and your mix doesn't sound good at a low level, then your mix is done. Although this is going down the intricacies of mastering now. You should pick up that during the mastering process. But gentlemen, I realise we're 40 minutes in now and we've got some music to play. So I don't want to lose time. No. So we're gonna play some music now. This is a new feature I brought in at the 12 days of Synthmas, and it went quite well. One thing we did realise is that when the music's playing, it's quite awkward. Everyone's just sat looking at the screen, which is quite odd. But exactly. No one really knew what to do.
We can dance.
You can do for free. If you're watching this on YouTube, you might see some individuals dancing. You'll also, I forgot to mention this, but Sub Neon has a t-shirt that says Sub Neon.
Yeah, it's
on
great. I'm liking actually, the t-shirt a lot.
Bit of promo there. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
It's a world exclusive. Yeah, there is literally only one in existence, and I can't imagine anyone would want to buy one.
Well, you say that, people are buying R9 t-shirts. I've sold a few now. Yeah. I don't own one myself yet. I'm too skint. But yeah, I must buy one.
So, Tim, are you doing it buy to order?
Yeah.
Because I was going to say, are you going to bring some to the gig in February?
I probably will. I will buy some myself, actually, and bring them to the gig. Yeah. I'll order some.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, might sell you one.
So, UK... UK yeah. audience. What is the date of that?
It's the 25th of February.
I'm going to be popping along to that.
Excellent. Excellent.
And it's in Bristol. Mm. Bristol, isn't it?
It is, yeah. 25th of February. Yeah, it's going to be a really good day, I think, because it's, you know, that in the afternoon, and then it's going on to Sunset Boulevard at in the evening. So it's going to be, Dusk Waves followed by Sunset Boulevard. Loads and loads of different synthwave acts all live. Good. Yeah.
It makes Bristol sound very nice. Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah. I mean, Bristol and Sunset Boulevard aren't really connected, are they? Other than that, you know. But yeah,
no. I lived there for a while. It's a fantastic city. But yeah, Sunset Boulevard. So let's go with Sub-Neo. And if we play yours first, just describe that. I love Bristol. I'm not slagging off Bristol there. I was born there. Sub-Neo, if you do, you want to give us a quick run through of your tracks? We've got 30 seconds. Give a bit of background on this track.
Yeah, well, okay. It's the fourth track that I produced under Sub-Neo, and it's kind of a follow-on to my previous release, which was called Step Up, which is moving away from what I wanted to achieve from Sub-Neo to a degree, but I quite liked it. So it's a bit more upbeat than I would generally put out there. But the tracks that I produce are very much reflective of the mood that I have at that particular moment in time. So, after coming out of some pretty tough times, things were looking up with new jobs and you know, family stuff getting resolved and all the rest of it. So I wanted to produce something that would give me a sort of a thumping beat and a fat bass and something to nod along to as I drive down the road. So I put a snippet of the track out on Instagram because I couldn't think of a name. And half a dozen to a dozen people just picked Glow. So it seemed to fit quite nicely with the vibe of the track. So yeah, I'm really pleased with this one.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Have you got a release date for it yet?
It will be when you finish mastering it, Mark.
So, that would
work.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Right, let's play so this is Glow. Fantastic stuff. I like that you had a little fade there at the end. That was great. That reminds me of a lot of Clintone, actually. Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that you've been bouncing ideas back and forth with Clintone, because it reminds me of I can hear the subtleties of Clintone in there, and I see Tim nodding along.
I quite like that sort of thing, because it's got that, a bit like Clintone, sort of like, and when you mention it, it's sort of synthwave vibe, but a sort of slightly more club EDM kind of tinge to it, but it's not that. Mm. It's not straightforward, you know. I mean, and I'd say the same with Clintone. It's definitely sort of synthwave retro kind of vibe in there, but at the same, a more dance sort of floor version of it, which is quite a lot of stuff that I like that really sits in that sort of mould, I think. So nice, really melodic, but got a good, really, as you say, thumping groove in there, which is good. Yeah.
Yep, I have a thumping groove.
And I appreciate everyone nodding along and dancing. I think I was the only one that wasn't. So,
I heard my same song 500 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly it, Legacy. But yeah, when you've heard the same song so many times, yeah. When somebody plays my own music back to me, I'm like, no, I don't want to hear it.
Right.
I don't want to hear it. Yeah, yeah. Which probably shouldn't do that, to be honest. There you go. So whilst we're talking to yourself there, Legacy FM, do you want to give us a bit of a run through of the track you've sent across?
Oh shit. Okay. So this one's called Desire. We just put out an album, and then I'm just already like trying to do something different. I just got tired of hearing those old songs from Dystopium. But yeah, different kind of vibe. I'm into the, like, genre blending, so it's a little bit more of like a new wave post-punk mixed with some trap and some synthy bass and other synth sounds. But yeah, cars, girls, and that about sums it up.
Fantastic.
Can't go wrong.
Trap. I'm sure. Yeah. Trap wave. Trap wave, man.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a song to listen to earlier today. I can't remember who it was. But there were elements of it in there as well with the hi-hats. And I can certainly hear, I haven't listened to this all the way through, but I'm sure there's going to be more and more of that coming through. But let's give it a listen before I stop me waffling on. That was a bit longer than 30 seconds. I didn't want to cut it halfway through the phrasing there. So
yeah, it's definitely like a two different songs mashed into one. So it goes into a breakdown where the vibe just completely changes, and then it circles back to that kind of feel.
Fantastic. But
yeah, that's fun. Mm.
The vocals, is that yourself or your collaborator?
No, just me trying to figure it out.
I like that.
I like really the vocals. Good. Excellent.
You're really good. And the new wave thing you mentioned, I can definitely hear that in there. Yeah, which is nice. So, yeah, I really like that song.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Your vocal processing, what are you using to get
you
that
don't
sort
want to
of...
know, dude. It's bad.
All right, let's go with like there's some sort of modulation or something going on there. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I mean, it's three or four different vocal tracks, so there's some harmonies, but yeah, just a little bit of reverb and I don't know, some vocal chain I just found on a YouTube video, and it's all built in to Ableton, so I didn't have to get any extra plugins or anything for it. So I don't know, microphone helps, I guess. I have no idea.
It's always a good place to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get far without one in the vocal department.
Yeah. You can have all the equipment you want, but if you haven't got a microphone, you're not going to lay down any vocals. Well, unless you've got a phone.
I wish I had a better answer. I really have no idea how I did it, to be honest.
No, that's fine, man. That's fine. It's
I just wing it.
It's just intrigued because it sits really well there because of the processing that's done on it. It kind of suits the aesthetic sound of the song.
Hey, cool. I'll take it. I love it.
I didn't hear the trap as much as I was thinking.
Have you got a release date? Was it already out?
Yeah, it's later on. No, I might just do this one as a single. We've got like four or five other tracks going for a new album, but we started off doing two albums without really singles, and kind of against the flow of what people say you should do, just punch out a bunch of singles and promote each one of them. But I just don't have time for all that. So two albums, put them out. And I think now we're going to go the single route and maybe do a cover.
Cool. I'm just going to skip it on a minute. I kind of want to hear this trap. This goes against my 30-second rule that I had, but I'm kind of intrigued by the trap now. I'm assuming this is the bit. Is this the bit you need?
Yeah, kind of 808.
It's
supposed to be fast.
Are you when you're creating those patterns, are you using a sequencer, or are you triggering them with a controller, or are you drawing them in with a mouse?
Akai MPK Mini 2, or I'll use a Roland drum set. So
nice.
Been doing a lot of sound design and getting kits actually, you know, ported over to that. Or I'll just draw them in. I usually start off playing either on pads or on the kit, and then I'll fix it up and add more to it.
It's funny because I've been busy, like,
love the Akai.
I've been busy all week, like, doing the sort of opposite, which is translating all my tracks that I've done for this live show. So I'm busy converting every single, like, sample I've created for my drummer, who's firing them all off a Roland. He's got a sample pad, one of their SPX sample pad things, and he's like sort of. So he's loading them all in. So it's going to be exactly, he's going to be playing the samples from my tracks. But, you know, he's actually firing them and playing them live. And it's really weird. I heard the first video back of him playing it. He's a really great drummer. But it's just, like, really different hearing a real drummer sort of playing what you've programmed. You know, it's kind of weird. But, yeah, it sounded good. So, yeah. But I'm so bored of exporting drum sounds. I didn't realise I made that many drum sounds, and like all the EQ and a compression and effects, and then you want to get them all right. So yeah, it takes ages. Mm.
It's got to be a challenge.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Tim. It's going to be nice for me to be the one observing, because I remember being in a band and being the one that was everyone was not looking at me, but looking at the band. You know.
Yeah.
So it's going to be nice to be in the crowd.
Well, hopefully yes.
And see this.
It'll all be fine unless something horribly goes wrong with the technology. I think that's the one thing I've always done band stuff where, you know, I haven't really had to worry on tech. The most that might go wrong might be, like, you know, the drummer would fall off his stool, or, like, you know, at the back, or, like, the, you know, you break a string, or, like, the keyboard players might have to restart his keyboard or something. But you know what I mean, there wasn't all that much to go wrong, technically speaking. But, like, this is the trouble when you're doing stuff with track. I mean, your computer goes down, something happens like that, it's just done, isn't it? It's just like suddenly all your music stops, and you're left there with someone hitting some pads and a guitar. So it could be quite bad news if it goes wrong. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah. Mic up those pads.
Yeah.
Get a 4-2-1 mic on the pads. Yeah. And just have them.
I'm putting
the pads.
My entire trust
as a backup.
In a 2012 MacBook. There we go. Yeah. That's pretty seat of the pants, isn't it?
Good luck, my friend.
I don't have enough money for another one.
Yeah, I had one of those.
Yeah, it's got an SSD in it.
Mine was running on Steam, I think, when I got rid of it. Oh, has it? Oh, that, well, that was better than mine. Mine didn't have
SSD.
An SSD
and 8 gig in it, so, you know.
Yeah.
But it still has no guts.
So, final track is from Aerowolf. Do you want to give us just a bit of a background on this track for us?
Yeah, sure, Mark. Yeah, this was a track, one of my earlier tunes called Photons is the name of it. And it was a collaboration with an Italian singer who I met on Instagram, Antonello Yamana. And he's kind of got that kind of baritone voice that is kind of synonymous with kind of early 80s music, I think. It sounds quite similar to that. Anyway, so this is sort of similar to what Legacy was described of his track. It's quite a new wave. That was the main inspiration. So kind of mid-80s, I think, rather than earlier 80s. But I wanted to do a bit of a remix of it, just putting my producer skills to good use over the sort of 2 or 3 years of since I first started. So wanted to give it a bit of oomph, a bit of punch. And this is the kind of result. So I'm quite pleased with the outcome.
Excellent stuff. Right, without further ado. It reminds me of a band, and I cannot think of who it is from the.
I'm really loving stuff like that right now.
Yeah,
I wanted to make it kind of live sounding as well, so hopefully it comes across like that. But
yeah,
and then he it just kicks in with the kind of main lead melody after that's the chorus. But yeah, I'm quite pleased with the outcome, with the result. It's come out quite well.
Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the band. It's certainly got like a synth, 80s synth pop sort of sound to it, which I love. I could listen to that sort of stuff all day. It's really, really cool. How did you? I'm always intrigued by vocals because I find that vocal mixing is probably one of the most challenging aspects of a mix and getting the vocals right. What have you used to, not necessarily EQ compression, but like create that sort of etherealness of the vocal?
I think I use quite a few different elements on his vocals because his vocals were quite raw. So I used quite a few different effects from memory. I mean, I did use a vocoder on one of the layers of the vocals, as well as obviously the de-esser. I use that. I use a CLA 76 compressor on the vocals, and then panned, you know, one left, one right, as you would normally do. I think I got that tip from you, Mark, maybe one of your videos. But yeah, tried to make it sound a bit more depth to the vocals. I think there were some Ableton plugins I used as well. I'm trying to think which ones I used. But there was a few I used, you know, stock plugins on the vocals just to give it a bit more oomph. But yeah.
So we've got two Ableton users. Legacy F, you said Ableton. Subneon, are you using Ableton as well? Wow, that's the first time we've ever been outgunned.
Ableton 11, yeah.
Yeah. Three Ableton users. I know, Tim, you're Cubase.
Yeah,
you?
I use the only door worth using here, yeah.
I'm Logic.
Yeah.
Although you use main stage. I know we're having a chat about main stage.
Yeah, I was trying main stage. Yeah. Gave up with it, gone back to Cubase.
Yeah. But Ableton's good for live, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you guys, Ableton users, if you've ever used it live or considered using it live. I dabbled briefly.
I've got to learn how to use it in a studio environment first. Right. I don't think it's going to work taking it out on the road.
To be honest, yeah. I...
Goes back to what Tim says right at the beginning,
I ended up going back to having... I tried Mainstage and I tried Ableton, like thinking that I would try those for my live show, but I've ended up going back to Cubase and making it work for what I want to do because I know it inside out, so... It's what I know. Yeah. Stick with what you know and learn it well. And then I've worked out ways that I can do what I want to do in it. I mean, if you were doing loop-based stuff like a lot of people do on Ableton, it wouldn't really work. It's not really designed for that. But, like, you know, what I'm doing, it's going to work. So should be all right. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yeah. Gents, we've come to the hour mark now, so we're gonna wrap it up. It's been great. So what I'm going to do is I'll go around to each of you. If you can just tell our audience where they can find you online, and I'll put all those links in the show notes for the episode so they can find you and find your music. So I'll go around on the screen here. So Legacy FM, where can the audience find you online?
I'm all over the internet. Can't miss me.
I just put the internet.
All the socials, of course. I usually only focus on Instagram. Music's on Spotify, Apple Music, all the streaming services. But yeah, just hit me up on IG. I'm down to collab, whatever.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you very much. Subneon, where can we find you?
It's same as Legacy. I'm on every single social media outlet there is. Spotify is my primary route to the audience, I guess, and Instagram for social media. So just search Subneon, sub_neon, and you'll be able to find it.
Yeah. Can I add Legacy FM Vibes is my IG. Legacy FM Vibes.
Legacy FM Vibes.
I assume we're following each other.
Errowolf.
I was about to say, I gave everyone a follow today. I think I was listening to Legacy FM's album. Very, very good, actually. And I like your bio on Spotify. I might think it's too important.
Nobody's hitting me up on that. It's a little Easter egg. Don't ruin it here, though.
Oh, I'm going to have to look this up.
Yeah, same with me. All the usual places. If you search up Errowolf music or Errowolf, not to be confused with the gaming Errowolf, but yeah, Bandcamp, usual place, Errowolf music. Yeah, pretty much everywhere.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Errol Wolf. Legacy, I'm not going to spoil it. I just looked it up. It's very good. I like that. that's really good. Audience listening, go check out Legacy FM on Spotify.
I'm going
to
do that.
Look at the bio and respond to it. Respond to it as well. And Tim, where can the audience find you?
Isle9 Music on IG, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, all the rest of it. I'm an IG person, really, so you're going to find me there. And I agree, Spotify is probably my main sort of streaming platform. And Bandcamp, absolutely. Just Isle9, just search Isle9 on Bandcamp. On Twitter, I'm pretty active you'll find me at Isle9 Synthwave, actually. I'm also at Isle9 Music, but my Isle9 Synthwave account is much bigger. So, you know, but like, essentially, yeah, hit me up on IG, whatever you want. I am there, probably.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And as I mentioned at the beginning, or rather at the beginning of this section, I'll put all the links in the show notes. So, folks, audience listening, if you want to join myself and others at the Synth Pals Pub, don't forget, and you want to feature on this, don't forget, you can go to www.insidethemixpodcast.podia.com. As you can listen from this episode, it's just a great way to network, chat to your peers, and learn and share ideas. And every episode gets published on air. So if you want to feature a snippet of a track and we can have a quick chat about it on air, if you've got something coming up or you need help with a particular bit, you can get that featured in the episode as well. Gentlemen, thank you very much for this today. It's been great. It's been a great start to 2023 in the Synth Pals Pub and reopening the doors. And thank you very much.
Hi, this is George, a.k.a. Carmen Noodles. And one of my favourite episodes of the Inside the Mix podcast is episode 42 featuring Year of the Fall. It was amazing to hear about their workflow and how they deal with the challenge of collaborating in different time zones. Keep up the amazing work, Mark.